朋友们，咱们今天这个视频有点深度了，我要去对谈全球最大的教育公司多邻国的创始人兼 CEO 路易斯。
Hello,
hi,
it's good to see you.
Good to see you again.
熟悉咱们频道的朋友可能知道哈，两年半之前我跟路易斯就聊过一次，当时聊的是他怎么从零到一做起来的，反馈那是排山倒海的好啊。
臭不要。
说实在的，我本来以为这两年 AI 会对多邻国这种模式造成巨大的负面冲击，但没想到它的月活数量持续上涨，市值在一年之内翻了三倍，这怎么回事？而最近半年多，它的股价又是一路跌跌撞撞，这又是为什么？咱们今天也可以站在路易斯的角度来感受一下华尔街这个资本的力量。作为 CEO， 也要被业绩考核，被 review。
It's funny because I just got performance review.
You get a performance.
I get a performance review, and I just got it. I can tell you what my performance review says.
我觉得哈，这段访谈路易斯真的是非常非常的真诚，你可以完全拨开一个大佬一个 CEO 的滤镜，了解他真实的决策真实的困境，而且他真的是非常的幽默。我们聊了关于他对多邻国的商业思考， AI 对教育对社会的冲击，还有他自己作为 CEO 的成长和人生的感悟等等，很多对话说实在的我真的都舍不得删，所以这段视频呢确实有点长，但我相信你看完会非常舒服。可能很多朋友还不是特别了解多邻国和路易斯，所以我们快速介绍一下。路易斯出生在北美洲的危地马拉，他可以说是一个计算机天才，卡耐基梅隆大学计算机系的教授，开发了那个让全球用户非常烦躁的验证码系统 Recaptcha， 后来卖给谷歌实现财富自由。紧接着他就和他卡耐基梅隆的学生 Hacker 共同开发了多邻国，用小游戏的方式教你学外语，每天花几分钟，你要是一天没做，他那个可爱有个性有时候甚至有点烦人的小绿猫头鹰多尔就会用各种搞笑阴阳怪气的方式去催你上课。这只绿猫头鹰迅速火遍全球，最近在国内也跟美团瑞幸合作，到现在多邻国注册用户已经达到了10亿，月活1.3亿，2021年纳斯达克上市，并在2023年参与了非著名自媒体小丽说的对谈，影响力进一步扩大。最后这句是个小幽默。总之现在全球非常多的地方，多邻国已经成了学语言的一个代名词。
In most countries in the world, the brand of Duolingo is really equated with language learning. So when somebody thinks about language learning, they just think of Duolingo.
不过啊，最近这两年，你看它的股价经历了一个过山车，24年底到25年中翻了三倍多，然后从25年6月开始一路下滑，日子可着实是不太平。这轮大涨是因为什么呢？我用最简单的原因总结，就是 AI。他在24年开始跟 OpenAI 合作，推出了最高等级的订阅服务，叫 Duolingo Max， 就是会有一些 AI 的功能。不光整体的用户数量持续上涨，关键是付费用户也持续上升。你看，这就是资本最喜欢的趋势了。不光结合了 AI， 还真的用 AI 赚上了钱。那好不容易都坐上 AI 的火箭，都起飞了，怎么突然股价开始跌了呢？哎，我说出来你可能都不信，这很大程度上是路易斯的主动选择。
Because of AI, I really believe that the way people learn.Is going to fundamentally change over the next few years.
Sure.
It just is the case that with apps, you can teach a lot better. So I made a decision a few months ago that we were going to prioritize teaching better and user growth over making money. I made that decision.
That's a big decision.
Yes, it is a big decision, especially because we're a publicly traded company. I knew that making this decision was not going to be popular in the stock market, and it wasn't popular in the stock market.
Sure, for sure, yeah.
And so our stock has gone down quite a bit. You know, this was on purpose.
好家伙，那投资人一听肯定不乐意了呀，你这都好不容易抓准了 AI 的变现路子，有钱不赚那不傻吗？是吧？那为什么路易斯宁可得罪华尔街还要这么干呢？
Because we want to invest in the future rather than trying to make as much money as possible in the next 3 months.
Is that like to gain more users, to get more learning data?
It's to get more learning data so that we can teach better, but it's alsoOne of the things we've noticed is that whenever we get a user, we're very good at keeping them there because the streak is there, all the gamification. So we would just like to have a much larger user base. Over time, we will make more revenue that way if we have a larger user base.
In the long term, yeah, I see.
我跟你说哈，虽然他很有想法，愿意放手短期利益，但是他也不是纯硬刚。他一再跟我强调哈，说明年我们还是要回归追求商业化的。哎，资本们，你们听人说话别光听一半哈，你们得听全。明年回归，回归啊。
Generally, we've concentrated on teaching better.Growing users and revenue. Next year, we'll probably go back to all three, but this year we're mainly concentrating on teaching better and growing users. It has been tough because the stock market has not been very friendly to us. But other than that, the company keeps growing very, very fast.
You said like next year, you're going to do the three pillar thing to get the monetization back. What's the logic behind? Is there something specific you do this year?
Well, first of all, one thing to clarify. It doesn't mean that next year we're going to start charging. We're not going to give features for this year and then start charging for them next year. No. Whenever we give a feature for free, it'll stay for free forever. But we will concentrate a little more on monetization next year than this year. As a company, we understand that it is important that we also make money. I mean, we have to pay people salaries. You know, we have to make plushies. we have to do things.
Gotcha. Yeah. It's just like right now, getting users are
that
more prioritized.
That is the priority.
I see.
你看看，这当个 CEO 是不是挺难的？又不能得罪资本，更不能得罪用户。这边跟资本说，哎，别担心，我们明年就赚钱了啊。那边跟用户说，别担心，你们免费的功能会一直免费。那剩下的就只能自己卷自己了，去想着给这些用户做一点更新的、更有意思的东西。
I'm gonna show you something.
Okay, you're gonna show me something.
You ready?
Okay.
Nothing scary. Nothing scary. This is my streak.
891 days.
Actually, since we chatted last time, I started in languages using Duolingo.
Okay.
I think that's probably...
So we talked last time 891 days ago.
Probably, yeah, okay. Around that. Okay. Yeah.
这个 streak 呢，大概就是连胜的意思。你看，我现在已经902天了，就是说我已经有902天连续不间断的在用 Duolingo 学习了。我以前呢，学了熊熊的粤语，现在呢，正在学 Espanol. Me llamo Lindsay, ¿cómo se llama? 我觉得哈，用了这么多年下来，你知道多邻国最成功的一点是什么吗？就是这个绿猫头鹰多尔，这个挺可爱，但是又感觉精神不太正常的猫头鹰的形象，可以说成为了一个全球超级 IP， 全网的用户、全球的用户都拿它玩梗，拿它二创。多邻国官方也经常让这个多尔下场自黑、玩梗、互动。我估计很多人可能都没用过多邻国，但看着这个绿猫头鹰，还是感觉非常亲切。之后呢，多邻国也顺势创造了像 Lily、Dali、Eddie 等等多个火爆的 IP。你现在可能感觉挺好玩的，顺理成章，但你有没有仔细想过，一个教育的软件本来应该是最正经的 app， 结果弄出来这些 IP， 感觉没一个正常的，各有各的性格，各有各的毛病。
You're an education company.、
Mm-hmm.
You have a mascot,、
mm-hmm.
which is a green bird. Sometimes he goes crazy, right? This thing is like a culture iconic right now for Duolingo.、
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering.At the beginning, is it intentionally designed or is kind of grow organically?
It was both. We intentionally added a mascot because I always thought that a mascot would get people to come back. Oh my God. See, he goes crazy. he goes crazy.
Oh,
okay.
Hi.
Okay, hi, Duo. He's going crazy.We've always known that having a mascot is something that gets people to want to learn more. So we put it in the first version of the app, had the mascot, and it was there. But...What happened more organically is his personality was in part invented by the internet.
Oh, by the internet. You didn't design
parts of it. We definitely designed that it was a green owl,、
mm-hmm.
but it didn't have much of a personality. The icon for the app is the face of the owl. So we decided that whenever the app、mm-hmm. sends you a notification, operating systems always put the icon of the app right next to it. So whenever you get a notification,、uh-huh. the icon is right next to it, and it happened to be the face of the owl.
Uh-huh.
So people started thinking that the notifications were coming from the owl, not from the app.
Uh-huh.
And so they started ascribing the personality of the notifications to the owl. At first, the notifications were very simple, but we started doing more interesting things with the notifications. For example, at some point, we added a notification. If you didn't come back for a few days, the notification said, these reminders don't seem to be working. I'm going to stop sending them for now.
It's like have some personality, not
yes,
just a notification.
Yes, yes. And then、yeah. people on the internet started saying, oh, the owl is passive aggressive. the owl really will go through great lengths to do it. So then they started making memes about how the owl really will go through great lengths to get you to come back and do your lesson. Like the owl would kidnap your family、so that you do a lesson. It turns out that for characters to be good characters, what they need is they need to have something they really want. And for them to be a good character,the thing they really want, there must be an obstacle for them to get it. In the case of the owl, all the owl wants is for you to do your lesson.、
Mm-hmm.
And the obstacle is that you're lazy.
So you figure people like this kind of personality and then you intentionally design the owl.
Yes. Whenever the memes on the internet、uh-huh. would appear, we would look at it and we would say, oh, we should do more of that、because people like that.
I see. So it's、yeah. kind of like an iteration as well.
That's right.
The team sent me this plushie.、
Mm-hmm.
It's quite
oh,
big.
Oh, that one. Oh, that one. When that was first suggested to me, I、
you、
was
said
a little...
No?
No, I didn't say no. I was a little...
Concerned?
Yeah, a little concerned. But my chief of staff, it's a woman named Molly, she wouldn't stop laughing for like a minute that we were going to have a boyfriend pillow. Yeah. And so I thought this has got to be a good idea. Some of the marketing campaigns, I think, have pushed the boundary a little too much. Uh-huh. And we've sometimes said no.
It happened before, right? Did it ever happen?
We've said no to a few things. I've said no to a few things. We never actually did this. And I don't think they would have gone through with this one. But somebody suggested that the Owls should have an OnlyFans page.
OnlyFans,
oh no.
I said no. I'm like, please don't do that. Each of the different local teams has to be trying to push the envelope. Uh-huh. But we try very hard. Again,
so there is a boundary.
Yeah. Look, ultimately, we want to be a family brand. Internally, we say the words that we use is wholesome, unhinged. Wholesome just means that it is like, it's not overly sexualized, that it is warm, family, not overly sexualized.
Okay.
Unhinged is that it's crazy. So it's like crazy, but safe. We don't want to do anything that will turn people off. And we don't want it to be the case that parents tell their kids to stop doing Duolingo because Duolingo's on OnlyFans.
I see, yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about your personal development as a CEO since it's almost like 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. Any personal development of you, like you, as a CEO, you grow or managing the team?
It's funny because I just got, every year I get a performance review.
You get a performance review?
I get a performance review and I just got it.
From the board or?
It's both the board and the people that report to me. So the executive team and the board come together and write me a performance review. I can tell you what my performance review says.
Wow.
There's some stuff that I'm good at, but I will tell you the things that I need to improve because they've been the same things for a lot of years. I'm just getting slowly better, but not a lot. Probably the biggest one is that I ultimately I'm conflict avoidant. So I avoid conflict. If there's something that I need to tell you that I know you're really not going to like. Uh-huh. It's very difficult for me to tell you. I have a very hard time telling you something you're not going to like. Uh-huh. And as a CEO, I sometimes have to tell you things that you're not going to like. For example, you're not doing a good job. Uh-huh. That is a hard thing for me to do. Uh-huh. That's kind of the biggest thing that I'm always being told. My executive team has been working with me for most of them for like 10 years. Yeah. So they know me super well. Uh-huh. By now they've learned to read me. They say like, oh, there's something you don't like, but you're not telling me. So can you please just tell me? But that is kind of the biggest thing that I have to get better at. And I've been trying to get better at it. So I would say in the last 3 years, I've gotten better at that. Uh-huh. But I'm not yet perfect.
Is it better if you're familiar with that person?
Much better.
You can be more straight.
Much better. After about 5 years.
After 5 years, that's yes, long time.
I get good at telling you. So for example, in this trip to China, we just came with our chief product officer, Jem. I have no problem telling him if he's doing a bad job. I'm like, Jem, you're not doing a good job. So I don't have a problem, but it's because I've worked with him for almost 10 years. But if it's a new person,
it's difficult
it's really not good. You know, in my time as a CEO, I've had 2 or 3 people that when I'm telling them something they don't like, they start crying.
Oh no.
That I'm like, it's really terrible.
I think in a lot of companies, especially when it's large, they're saying that you got to be straight with the problem you're saying and just be more straightforward. Mm-hmm. It's like a better culture. What do you think of that?
And how I completely would
you,
agree with that.
You agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that. And for me, it's not hard to be straightforward if it is about a project or about a problem.
About things itself.
Yeah, but about a person, I have a hard time. So if I think it's going to upset you about you, then I have a hard time. But if it's just something like, this is not working, that is much, much easier. But like, you are not working, that's very hard.
That's very hard. It is hard.
Yeah, it's very hard for me.
Okay, I got you. Yeah. Have you ever tested your MBTI personality?
I have tested it, but I keep forgetting what it is. I am an extrovert.
You are an extrovert?
I am.
Oh. Okay, I thought you were an introvert.
No, I am an extrovert, but I am shy, which is
okay.
I am shy with new people, but I am an extrovert. I get energy from people.
Okay.
And then I am also judging.
You're judging? Okay.
I'm more thinking than feeling.
You're more thinking than feeling.
Yes, but I'm judging.
You're trying to avoid conflict with people.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. How would you describe your character? Like, you prefer to be a product manager or a teacher or a manager or just a tech genius? Or how would you...
I prefer to be a micromanager.
Oh, no. Really?
Yes. That's another thing that I have gotten better at over time. It just turns out that after about 100 employees, you can't micromanage everybody.
For sure, yeah.
But if I could, I would.
when the team gets larger, since you like micromanaging, do you feel it's more difficult to manage? Or
I've gotten much better at it. I mean, over the years, I now know that, in fact, micromanaging in most cases is not good. I now understand that, but I still really want to, but I stopped myself. I also have gotten a lot better at knowing when your executive team is really good, you know that you can delegate most things. So by now, I know whatever problem there is, I just say, you do it. It's much better than me doing everything. Yeah. Also, the people, at least in my executive team, are better than me at each of the things. For example, our marketing person is much better than me at marketing. Our product person is better than me at product. Our engineering person is better than me at engineering. So I now know just to
give it to them.
Yeah, and it's much better. But I really would like to do it myself.
Gotcha. Is it like to conquer something with the joy yourself?
I just get pleasure from solving problems. For me, happiness is solving problems.
It's not the worriness about something went wrong or...
No, it's really solving problems yourself. Yes. And
this is also
another thing. It's taken me years to learn this, but when you have a significant other, like my wife, she sometimes has a problem herself or is not feeling great. My inclination is to sit next to her and solve the problem for her. Tell her, here's what you need to do. I have learned it's much better to just sit there and be like, tell me about it. And then say, that's really tough. Listen.
Listen.
Listen matters more.
Emotional support.
Yes.
Did you have a lot of girlfriends before that? Before your marriage?
I'm too scared to even answer that question at this point in time. Please, no.
No.
I love you, honey. You don't understand.
2025年初呢，多邻国公开了一个他们内部的员工手册，可以说一经发布就在科技圈、产品经理圈传开了。但一方面呢，写的很有意思、很好玩，还配了很多图；另一方面呢，也传递出来了非常深刻的企业价值观。哎，这个员工手册哈，我去年采访 Mr. Beast 的时候，他们也有一个非常火爆的员工手册，包括硅谷科技圈有一个流传很广的 Netflix 的员工手册，这些都很出圈。我跟你说哈，你别看它的名字叫做员工手册，但凡你读，真的会让你在商业认知上有一种被醍醐灌顶的感觉。我们平时看一家公司，可能更多的是看到了他们在做什么，如何做到的。但这些员工手册呢，它是从底层进一步去解释了他们为什么要这么做，他是怎么想到要做这些，怎么能持续不断的去做这些。你看，不管是 Mr. Beast、Netflix 还是多邻国，这三家你看着好像八竿子打不着的公司，他们有一个共同点，你知道是什么？就是他们的人效比都极高。人效比就是平均每个人每年给公司创造了多少价值，也就是说这三家公司都是用最少的人赚了最多的钱，平均每个人给公司创造的价值都超过了$100,000。你就想多邻国全球的员工还不到900人， Mr. Beast 虽然没上市，咱不知道具体的数，但你估算一下其实也差不多，不到500个人的团队一年营收至少6-7亿美元，是吧？人均也破100万了。你想他怎么能维持如此之高的利润率？当然一方面是他们做的产业，但背后还有一个关键，就是这个公司的理念。我怎么能吸引激发每个员工最大的潜力？哎，怎么吸引呢？这就是他员工手册之前的地方，他就开诚布公的把这些全告诉你了。所以我建议哈，大家不管是员工还是老板还是投资人，你要是感兴趣就可以先看看，非常有意思。
哇、wow.
我稍微扯远了，再说回来。
Yeah, the handbook, the reason we wrote it was so that especially new employees and potential employees could see what it's like to work at Duolingo and what the culture is like. So...The main thing that the handbook has is 5 principles. We explain each of the principles. And what's awesome about these principles is that they're not aspirational. They're actually what we do. Mm-hmm. It's not like a principle like, be the best. Like, you know, it's nothing like that. So, for example, one of them is take the long view, which is, you know, we want to have a company that is around for 100 years. Think that way, as opposed to what's good for tomorrow. So that's a big principle, probably the most important one. Another one is make it fun.So throughout, not only our product should be fun, internally working at Duolingo should be fun. So that's another important principle. Another one is called ship it, which is we really try not to sit there arguing forever about whether something's a good idea or a bad idea. They just make it and do it. Another one is show, don't tell. In many companies, the culture is such that when you're presenting something, first of all, you explain for a really, really long time what you're doing. And half of that explanation is how hard you worked.I did this and I stayed up all night and whatever.
You don't care about that.
No.
Just deliver the value,
Just show me what you did. Instead of the whole story of how you, trials and tribulations about how you got to there, just show me the thing. So that's another one. And then the last one is raise the bar. Always just try to do better than we did before. So those are the operating principles, and we have a whole handbook about, you know, different examples of things we've done for each one of them.
That's kind of the culture of Duolingo.
Yeah, these five really capture the culture pretty well.
Very nice. Do you think as the company grows larger, it's difficult to preserve the value, preserve the culture?
Yeah, but I think we've done a good job. I think it is still true. Certainly these five things, I think, are quite true.
Quite true.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. I think a lot of people may say Duolingo is good as a game, but to truly master a language is kind of difficult if you only spend like 5 minutes a day.
Yeah, so a couple of things to say about that. We have a lot of studies that show that Duolingo is very good at teaching. You can actually learn a language and get to a very fluent level in Duolingo. Yeah. So it's very good at teaching. However, there's a bit of a misconception, and it's exactly what you said. If you only learn for 5 minutes a day, it's just going to take some time. That is just a feature of the human brain. It takes the human brain that long to get good at a language. So for example, our entire French course to learn French on Duolingo, if you only do one lesson a day, which is about 3 minutes, it takes 22 years to learn it. It works. It's just going to take 22 years. If you want to go faster, you probably want to do more than one lesson a day. So, for example, if you do two lessons a day as opposed to one, that's 11 only 11 years. Okay. Yes.
That's like get to how, I mean, how what, that, what that, kind of level?
That is a Duolingo score 130, which gets the level there is a level in which you can be good enough to communicate at work. There may be some things out there that tell you that you can learn a language in 3 months. That's just not true.
Yeah, that makes sense. If you want to truly master a language, you got to learn, right?
You got to spend the effort. You got to spend hours. It's just, there's no, if the languages are far apart, for example, English and Chinese are far.
Yeah.
Then it takes longer. For example, if you're native in Mandarin and you need to learn Cantonese, that's much faster. That's much faster. Similarly, if you're learning native in English and you want to learn Spanish, that's much faster. But far apart languages, they just take longer.
Yeah, I checked my Duolingo score on Spanish.
Uh-huh.
It was only like 18, I guess, because I only do like one course a day.
Okay,
that's why.
18 is getting to be pretty good. Okay, you probably now know some Spanish.
Entry level, yeah. I can recognize some words and at the airport, and I can maybe order a hamburger at McDonald's.
Yeah. See, it starts becoming useful. And depending on your score, so for example, a Duolingo score, if you're at like 30, you can really reliably order things at a restaurant.
Okay.
If you're at, for example, 50, you can read a short story in that language.
50?
Yeah, at around 50. If you're around 90, you can watch a TV show.
I see. I'm counting like how many years I need to
well,
get to
90. Well, you
got to
do more than one lesson a day.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
I'm going to work harder. Yeah, for sure.
I got to tell you, Spanish TV shows are very good. There's this thing called telenovelas in Spanish, and they are very emotionally manipulative. They keep you watching because they emotionally manipulate you.
Yeah, it's like TikTok.
It's like TikTok, yes.
I see. What are the areas Duolingo is using AI right now?
Practicing conversation, which we talked about.
Uh-huh.
Also, all of our content. So whenever you're learning, there has to be content that you're learning. It used to be made by people. It is now mostly made by AI. So the content to learn math, the content to learn chess, all of that is mainly made by AI. And that means that we go a lot faster at generating content. So for example, 2.5 years ago, from Chinese, you could not learn all the languages that you can today. And we didn't even know if we were going to be able to add all these languages from Chinese because each one just required a lot of effort. But now we just did it much faster and it was not that expensive to add all the content to learn from Chinese because of AI.
Oh.
So that's these are the types of things that are really helping us.
Oh, okay. How much faster? Like maybe how many courses can you make before and after?
It's hard exactly to quantify, but what I'll tell you is this. The amount of content we made in the first 12 years of Duolingo, it was all done by hand, etc. Over the last 2 years, we have made 50 times more content?
50 times more.
50 than what we did in the first 12 years. It's a lot faster.
Wow.
It just goes a lot faster.
Now I can maybe have a context of that because each language is like a pair.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's the problem. The problem is that each language is a pair. So there's a lot of pairs. Learning English for Korean speakers.
Yes.
That was a different course than learning English for Japanese speakers. And that was a different course learning English than for Spanish speakers. And each one of them we had to make. Now, much faster with AI, and we're able to do that.
Wow. I can see that maybe you can expand faster in Chinese market since AI development.
That is a big reason why we've expanded a lot in the Chinese market. We're also going to be soon adding a course for Shanghainese. which I am told by the people in this office that will be really popular. I wouldn't know, but the people in this office really like that.
You have no idea it's going to go popular or not.
I don't really know, but they swear it's going to be really popular.
Yesterday, when I opened up the app, there is a line saying that Duolingo also teach endangered languages like Hawaiian.
Yeah.
Is that because of AI?
Or? No, that is not because of AI. And I'll tell you where AI... It turns out that AI is not good at endangered languages. So a lot of people have been asking us, can you add more endangered languages now that you have AI? Unfortunately, AI is not particularly good at Hawaiian because there's just not a lot of data to train. So endangered languages, that is not something that we've been able to speed up yet.
I see. So it's more like a social responsibility thing?
Yeah, we like those. So we teach a few of them. Again, one of the problems is there are 7,000 languages in the world. there's a lot of those.
Have you ever thought in 10 years, the real-time translation can be quite perfect?
It's already, I would say, pretty much perfect.
Yeah. What's the point?
Of learning a language.
Of learning a language. And what's the point of Duolingo?
So real-time translation, by the way, it's not just now. I would say for the last several years, maybe about 10 years, real-time translation got really good about 10 years ago. Like Google had Google Translate, and it was pretty much perfect about 10 years ago. In that time, we have not seen the desire to learn a language go down. It has, in fact, gone up. And I think the biggest reason is, in Duolingo, we have two big groups of people. One big group of people are people who are learning language as a hobby. If it's a hobby, it doesn't matter. I mean, similar to chess, you know, computers have been better at chess than humans since 1997. And then there's another large group of people. Generally, these are people who are learning English who actually need to learn it. So, for example, if you're going to be a flight attendant or if you're going to work at a hotel, you need to learn English.
Because people still need to communicate. It's not like you can wear something.
And it's a pretty interesting thing. I mean, when you're to really learn a language, you know, one of the ways you know you're really good at a language, and I ask people, for example, yesterday we were at dinner. Somebody did not grow up in China, but has been in China for a year or two. I was asking them how good their Chinese was. And they were trying to explain to me. And I asked, can you join a group conversation? Like if there's a lot of people talking about it, can you join a good conversation? And she said, about half the time. And that tells me roughly how good you are at a learning language. But this is, for example, if you're there with like a phone trying to join a group conversation, it kind of doesn't work.
Interesting.
Like it just doesn't work. It's awkward. You know, group conversations, people are saying jokes, they're saying more, they're adding, they're interrupting each other. It's very hard, even with very good real-time translation. So I think, that, you know, if you really want to be part of a culture, for example, if you move to China, you're always going to be a major outsider if you don't know the language. Similarly, I was just in the CDF, the China Development Forum. I don't know Chinese, and I had to listen to everything.
Most
with a little
of the
thing.
CEOs would do the
yeah,
same,
sure,
right?
Yeah, sure, almost everybody. You know, the translation was done by humans, and it was very fast, and it was very good, but you still couldn't quite get all the things, and you felt, you felt like you were an outsider, et cetera. So again, if you actually want to, you know, move to the country or go study in the United States or something, you actually need to learn a language.
Since you work on education a lot, what do you think would be the future of education because of AI? Do you think school is going to be existing or any
I do think school
like,
will
structural
exist.
Change?
So a couple of things to say about that. First of all, you know, some people worry that, well, maybe we don't need to go to school because AI will do everybody's job. First of all, I think that's many years away if that ever happens. And secondly, you still need to educate people. If you know any two-year-olds that are uneducated, if humanity was like a bunch of two-year-olds, this would not be good, right? It's chaos. So people still need to be educated in terms of learning values. They need to learn how to think. Like, for example, a lot of the early math education is just to learn how to think. Like, you need to learn how to count. You need to learn how to read. People still need to be educated, even with AI. Mm-hmm. So education will be needed. Schools are still needed for a couple of reasons. One, teachers are just really good at being role models. It's hard for an AI to be a role model because you're like, well, that's an AI.
You don't trust him.
Yeah, you're not just not a role model, but I think teachers are good at role models. Also, you know, during COVID, kids didn't go to school. A lot of times they stayed at home. I don't think many parents like that. Parents actually want their kids to go to school.
I think kids want to go to school
as
well.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing to have a place.
The social.
Yeah, to have a place where people learn how to be and parents can have. So I just don't think schools are going to disappear, even with AI. Mm-hmm. I do think that AI is going to be used more and more so that kids learn faster, kids learn better, et cetera. So I do think that's going to happen, but I don't think teachers or schools are going to disappear. But there's one other thing that is really important to mention. Most people just don't like doing it. they just are not as motivated to do it all that much. So one of the things that is really important, certainly when you talk about AI, is that it has to be high quality, but also we have to be motivating enough that you come back every day to do it.
I see. You mean the best teacher in the future is not only teaching you the course, but also getting you motivated and providing some emotional value.
That's exactly right. I mean, and both are needed. If it's just a really good teacher, I mean, by the way, yes, AI is really awesome. But if you had a lot of motivation, the reality is that you could learn most subjects by yourself, even
without a tutor.
Yes, you can just read a book.
Sure.
But most people don't do that. Like, the reality is that anybody in the world, if you have access to a public free library, you can probably learn quantum physics by yourself. You probably can, but most people just don't have, they're just not going to sit there for 10 years doing that. So it really matters that you can actually motivate people to do it. That is really half the battle.
Okay.
And so that's why we're working on that.
So you're going to replace the motivation part by gamification.
That's right.
That's what you're trying to do.
That's what we're trying to do.
Make it addicted as TikTok.
I would love it if we could do that, because then you would be addicted to something that's positive for you.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're ever going to be as addictive as TikTok, but we'll try. That's what we're trying to do.
I see. Good.
Yeah.
我相信啊，很多用过多邻国的朋友肯定都能感觉到，它最厉害的一点就是可以想尽各种招式、奇形怪状的方法去勾搭着你不断的回来学习。咱们刚才说的都是一些比较表面的招数。下面这个例子，它开发国际象棋课程这个例子，其实揭示了多邻国在商业上一个非常深入的理念。
I'll tell you a few things about chess. When somebody proposed to add chess on Duolingo was a few years ago. And I said, no, you should not add chess. I did not want to add chess because it's a game. And I'm like, what? Why do you want to teach a game? I want to teach languages. I want to teach math. I want to teach science. Why do you want to teach a game? They were disappointed and then they went away. As in, they kept on working for the company, but they, you know, they went to do other things. They were disappointed. Then I met with the Minister of Education of the country I was born in. I was born in Guatemala. I met with the Minister of Education. She was telling me how bad the education system is in Guatemala. Guatemala is a poor country. The education system is terrible. And she said, it's so bad that I am considering sending a chess set to every student because at least they'll learn logical thinking. And when she said that, I thought, maybe we should teach chess because it actually teaches you logical thinking. And it turns out that there's a lot of scientific studies that show that, of course, the education system is different in every country, but in the United States, the single best thing you can do to improve your grades, other than, of course, studying more, if you're not going to do that, the single best thing you can do to increase your grades is to do chess after school. That's the single best thing you can do to increase your grades. So that's why we decided to add chess. And I went back to the guy who had suggested chess to me, and I said, I changed my mind.
What did he say?
He was very happy. He's okay. Okay, let me add chess. And then I'm like, okay, well, you should add chess. And then he said, one problem. I don't know how to play chess.
You don't know, or he doesn't?
He doesn't know how to play. So he didn't know how to play chess. He paired up with another guy who knew very little chess. No. And the two of them combined, they're like, we're going to add a chess course. And I'm like, okay. And they also didn't know how to program. One of them was a designer. The other one was a product manager. And they're like, together, we're going to add a chess course. And I'm like, okay.
你看哈，一个完全不会下国际象棋的人和一个只会下一丢丢的臭棋篓子，俩人还不会编程，就要一起去开发多邻国的国际象棋课程了。你听着是不是感觉有点扯？哎，这个其实在多邻国众多的课程开发里头并不少见，这个也一定程度上解释了多邻国的课程为什么能这么成功。你继续听哈，这两人要去开发国际象棋课程了。
They learned a little bit of chess, but not a lot. They're not very good at chess, but they use AI to create a whole course without an engineer.We ended up needing an engineer to put it in the app. But the course, like all the data for everything, the prototypes and everything, all was done with AI. It's pretty incredible.
That's amazing. That's
yes,
amazing.
And by the way, to this day, these two guys, they're not very good at chess.
Still.
They're not very good at chess. But what I will say is that what is good about it is that they made a course for chess that makes chess accessible to people like them. Most other chess courses were made by chess grandmasters. And...
It's too difficult.
It's difficult. It's really high stakes. These guys made a chess course for people who are like them. You know, for example, one of the first things that if you go to the chess course, it teaches you the names of the pieces because these guys also had to learn the names of the pieces they didn't know. For example, there's a piece that looks like a horse. It's called a knight.
Oh, okay.
They call it the horse.
Horse.
They're like, well, it's the horse, but it's called a knight.
Well, that makes sense. It's like you're asking an expert to learn economic terms to some layman, then...They just couldn't explain very well.
Yes, and you know what else? When we started Duolingo, it was me and my co-founder, Severin. Neither of us were very good at learning languages, and neither of us were like language lovers. So
but
we
you,
also
you are not a language lover.
No, I am not. I mean, I now have learned a lot more about languages, and I have learned to learn to love languages. But when we started Duolingo, I was not a language lover.
How did you develop a course?
It's similar to the chess guy. Yeah, no AI, no. But at least so we went a lot slower. Uh-huh. But at least we made a course that was also accessible to people like us. Because the reality is, I didn't like learning languages. But Duolingo was a course that, even when I didn't really like the process of learning languages, it kept me coming back. But it's because I made a course for me, as opposed to somebody who is a major language lover. They didn't need the gamification because they are intrinsically motivated.
Naturally,
gotcha. It turns out only a small fraction of the world's population is intrinsically motivated to learn anything.
Of course.
So again, this is I think this is one of the key things about Duolingo. We make courses for the average person. And that's why we have so many users.
That's nice. That's like our goal, like making videos for everybody.
Yes. And that's the thing. I mean, there's a place for the very advanced.
But they probably don't need your app. They can learn by themselves.
That's exactly right. The people who are already very advanced at, or are going to be very advanced at chess or language, they don't need our app.
Yeah, the goal is actually to keep them coming back. Yeah.
Yes.
That's cool. 专业最酷炫的，而是要做用户最需要的，用户需要你专业，那你自然要往专业了做。而对于学习呢，用户需要的，或者说用户最需要的，其实不一定是专业性，而是学习的激励，学习需要花时间、持之以恒，这道理谁都懂。但我怎么能够降低你学习的痛苦感，对吧？这个就是多邻国的杀手锏，它就用一些小招数、小技巧，包括这个课程本身的设置，勾搭着你，对吧？每天来打卡，每天学一点，坚持。
You just went to the China Development Forum?
I did. It was very informative. It was very encouraging. It seems like China really wants to be open to foreign investment, which is good for us because we're a foreign company. A few years ago, when we first opened the China office, nobody ever thought that China would become the number one market. We thought, okay, we'll grow a little bit. That'll be good. But just every year, it grows more and more and more. And so by now, it's pretty clear that next year, China will be our number one market.
By the number one market, do you mean by users, sales or by users?
So by users, right now, US is one and China is two. Oh. Next year, China will surpass the US. By revenues, China right now is number four.
Number four.
I do believe that in a few years, it'll also surpass the US.
I saw a lot of crazy campaign went viral. Like, for example, you announced Duo is dead in the US.
Yeah.
And right now, Duo is also doing a partnership with Meituan, the delivery app. Where are those ideas coming from?
The local teams, in this case, the marketing team here in China is excellent. These are all local campaigns. In China in particular, it really has been one of the best countries for partnerships. It turns out that here, brands really want to partner with each other. And also Duolingo is seen as a very cool brand. We've just seen really excellent partnerships. We just had one with QQ Music. I think there's a lot more coming. I don't think I should spoil what they are, but there's a lot more coming that are pretty
awesome.
That's
exciting. That's exciting. 2 years ago, you mentioned the Duolingo English test. Mm-hmm. Any progress on that?
Yeah, we're very happy with the Duolingo English test. If you don't know what it is, it's a test that is accepted by 6,000 different educational programs in the world that you can take. You use it for admission. So historically, it's either been TOEFL or IELTS. But now the DETs, the Duolingo English Test, is accepted by the vast majority of places. And it's cheaper. And also, you can take it online. I mean, the big progress is that we're just accepted by a lot more institutions. And at this point, we don't know this for a fact, but we believe that we have surpassed some of the standard older tests in terms of number of tests taken. I'm very happy with it. By the way, that's another place where we use AI to prevent people from cheating. There's a lot of cheating attempts. We see it all the time. People are trying to find ways of cheating, and we do a lot of sophisticated things. And don't cheat on the DET.
Yeah.
We catch you.
If Duolingo is not teaching languages only anymore, do you think people may get impression that it's less focused, or Duolingo's aim to be a super app in education?
That's the aim, app in education. We may not teach everything, but we'll teach at least the things that take a long time to learn. I want to add science. We're not working on science yet, but I want to add science. I want to add drawing. You know, things that take years to learn, we want to be teaching.
I see.
I mean, generally, I want to stay mostly in education.
In education.
That's generally what I want to do.
Do you have to approve every course?
Yeah, I feel like I should. My power to add courses is not as big as you would like, as you would think, because right after languages, the course that I wanted to add was science. We added math. After math, I wanted to add science. We added music. After music, I wanted to add science. We added chess. So what I want is not as important, but I'm looking for somebody inside the company that's very passionate. Yeah. As opposed to me forcing people to do that.
Gotcha. How is the course development process? If somebody wants to develop a course about something, and do they come to you and you say yes or no, or you have a committee?
Yeah, what happens is that they usually come to me and I make a decision, but they usually come with enough data to show why it makes sense. One of the most important things that I want to hear is how many people in the world want to learn this. If it is something that only a million people in the world want to learn, I don't want to do it. But if it is something that hundreds of millions of people, then I'm a lot more interested. I also think it should be something that is good for the world.
好，接下来呢，就是一个我会问到每一个 CEO 的问题：你凭什么能这么成功？你的团队凭什么？
Since you are the founder and CEO of one of the biggest education company in the world, what do you think is your quality or your traits make you successful?
If you're going to start a company and you're going to run a company and run it until it's much larger, you have to be really committed. You know, we've been working on Duolingo for more than a decade. It just takes commitment every single day. One of the things that I think makes me successful is I'm very committed to what we're doing, kind of obsessed with what we're doing. So I think that helps me. I think another thing that helps me is that I am relatively good at putting myself in the shoes of our users. Every single day, I try to learn all the different subjects. I'm very bad at most things. For example, I'm very bad at music, and I'm trying to learn music on Duolingo. I'm not good at learning languages, and I'm trying to learn languages on Duolingo. Of late, I'm trying to learn Swedish because my wife is from Sweden. I'm not good at it, but that puts me in the shoes of the users.
Gotcha.
Because most people are not good at learning a language. So I think that is another thing that makes me good. I would say those are probably the two
biggest
things.
Two.
I mean, there's a lot of things that I know are not good.
Come on.
But these are the things that I know are good. Somebody said to me, the biggest thing about you is that you just work harder than everybody else. And that
because you're committed.
I'm very committed. Although I don't know if I work harder than the people in the China office here in Duolingo. These people work really hard.
I know.
They work really hard. But at least for the Western world, I work really hard.
Gotcha. Sounds good. You can't really achieve everything with yourself, and you are having a great team. Mm-hmm. What do you think your team is really good at, and how did you build a team like that?
The biggest thing that I've learned about the executive team is it took me years to get there. They don't give you a headache. If I just say, go fix this problem, and I never have to think about it again, I don't have to ask them whether it's been solved. They will fix it, and they'll come back to me and tell me, but I just can completely forget it.
Just pure trust.
Yes, and if I tell them, go fix this, I don't have to worry about it. It will get fixed in some amount of time.
Gotcha. In Chinese, it's called 靠谱.
Kaopu.
Reliable.
Yeah.
Reliable.
That's right. That is exactly what reliable. It took me years to get there with my executive team.
Of course.
But eventually, I have a team that is reliable.
How did you build a team like that? Any secret sauce?
No, it just took years.
Hire
people, and if it's not working, you know, usually when it's not working, both parties know. And so either they leave or you fire them. It took some trial and error, but at this point, I'm very happy with them. And I want to hold on to them forever.
Forever, yeah.
Yes.
Do you think the ability matters more or the chemistry between you guys matters more?
As I get older, I place more emphasis on chemistry and loyalty.
Loyalty.
Than ability. Now, ability should be there if they can't do their job.
Yeah, it's the
this
minimum.
This is not good.
Yeah.
You know, as you get older, it's not that like I'm that old, but as you get older, you start just treating things very differently. I just, at this China Development Forum, I met an investor who was much older. He's retired, in fact. Mm-hmm. Having a meeting with somebody like that, and it's happened a few times that I meet with somebody who's either in, you know, maybe their late 70s. Those meetings are very different than if you're having a meeting with somebody who's 30 or 40. Because the person who's 30 or 40 is asking you all the tiny little details about how your company was, like, how much profit do you make? And what's your percentage of it? The much older people are asking you questions like, tell me about your father. Like, that's the type of stuff they want to know.
Oh.
And you know, as you get older, you start realizing that's how you really get to know people, and that ends up mattering a lot. It gives you chemistry. It gives you like, okay, I understand you a lot better because I know this is how it is. So I'm starting to do stuff like that. For example, for everybody in my executive team, I kind of know how they grew up. And that tells me a lot about how they operate. For example, I have a very close and good relationship with our head of product. He's an only child. I am an only child too. As soon as I learn he's an only child, I'm like, I understand a lot about you. He's also an immigrant to the United States. Right there, I understand a lot about you because I'm also an immigrant to the United States. So just as you get older, you start thinking a lot more that way as opposed to tell me your numbers, tell me your metrics. That's starting to happen to me. Again, I'm not yet at the point where I'm 70 years old.
Sure.
But I think eventually I'll just start asking you, like, do you have children or not?
Oh.
It really helps. it really helps because it helps to see what motivates you. You know, there are people that are motivated by different things. Some mm-hmm. people are motivated by money. Some people are motivated by mastery, like they really want to master something. Some people are motivated by a mission. A lot has to do with how they grew up.
The way they think.
Yeah. Especially in the U.S., there's a very big difference between people who grew up in the U.S. versus people who grew up in other countries. And especially if they grew up in a developing country. It's a very big difference in how they act, what they're motivated by. And both are good. It's not like one is better than the other. It's just... It's good for me to understand what each person, what motivates each person.
That's very insightful. Also helpful to me as well. Yeah.
Well, yes. I mean, it really does. It's incredible how much the actual person and how they grew up. Mm-hmm. This is why I was asking yesterday in a dinner we had here, how many people here had tiger parents? I understand you. You had a tiger parent. You did not have a tiger parent.
Gotcha. That's why you behave this way. That's more understandable.
It's incredible how much each person behaves in a certain way, whether they have a, not just tiger parent, with anything, what, the relationship with their parents was.
好，这个就是我今天跟路易斯聊天的全部内容了。这肯定是咱们到现在为止最长的一期视频。不知道大家感觉这个形式怎么样？希望你不会觉得太无聊。你有什么想法、建议，都欢迎在评论区告诉我们。那我们就下期再见啦，拜，
再见
，Adios。What you gonna do when your circuit's being burned out?